So good afternoon. My name is Mike Niehaus. I'm a senior product marketing manager responsible for Windows deployment out of Redmond. I've been working with Windows deployment for what seems like an eternity now. It's probably been about 15, 16 years. And for a good portion of that time, I've been working with the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit. Today, what we want to talk about is what's new in the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit. We probably had a couple of releases since we've last got together at an event like this and talked about MDT. So we'll end up talking about two different releases at one time. We'll talk about MDT 2012, which was the version that came out back in April, and also MDT 2012 Update 1 that came out just a little while ago at the middle of August. See if I can actually get this thing to advance. Other than just beep at me. Oh, for two. There, it's happy. Save dialogue from PowerPoint from the previous session. As soon as it closed, it's happy. So let's talk about what's new in MDT 2012. MDT 2010 Update 1 was the version that was out last year at this time. That version's still available for download, although the support for that does end in April 2013. We're not planning on updating that because, not surprisingly, we moved all of our resources onto MDT 2012. The version that came out in April, MDT 2012 RTM, was to focus on System Center Configuration Manager 2012 and to get some initial support for Windows 8 Consumer Preview. We released that in April. Now, then, we moved on to MDT 2012 Update 1. The focus for that one was Windows 8 RTM and also to get ready for Configuration Manager SP1. Now, I know that says that the beta released this month. Well, that was as of a few weeks ago, and these slides were actually submitted. But it has been released now. It came out on August the 16th. And you can use that now to deploy Windows 8 RTM, as well as all the other older operating systems as well. So we didn't take anything away with MDT 2012 or Update 1. We just added support for the newest releases of Windows and the newest versions of System Center. So as far as the new features in MDT 2012 and Update 1, we wanted to make sure that we included something for all MDT customers regardless of scenario. So it's not just about System Center, or it's not just about Windows 8. We included functions that would be useful for everyone. We still have a simple upgrade process, so we can just install the latest version of the MDT MSI, upgrade our existing deployment chairs, or in the case of Config Manager, reintegrate with the Config Manager console, create new task sequences, and off we go. The major themes then, obviously, working with System Center is a big focus for us. Working with Windows 8 is a big focus, but we also integrated a whole bunch of new tools, products, and capabilities that we'll talk about as we go through this. Overall, the goal, as always, is to try to make deployment as easy as possible. We can't make it trivial, but we can at least make it simpler. So what can we do to integrate more things into the deployment process? So rather than focus on lists of features and talking about each one of those, we wanted to just flip it around a little bit and say, let's just focus on demos. Let's show you what has been added, what's been modified, and then we'll show you the list of features and make sure that we've checked off all the items on the list so that you've seen everything. So let's do that. Let me switch over to my virtual machines here and just show you a few of the changes that have been introduced for light touch deployments. So first of all, we've done a significant amount of work on the look and feel of the wizards. So in this case, we're looking at the initial welcome wizard that's presented when you first start a bare metal deployment. We've added some additional backgrounds and headers and just tried to make it look prettier in general. If you can't really see it too well in the picture, but cloud is the big thing for Microsoft. So if you look closely at the background for that, it's actually clouds. So okay, it's a poor joke, but MDT does now add clouds But in this case, what we're really interested in are the things that we've added into here. So we can see on the screen that we've added in support for Dart. So there's a link here where we can run the Dart tools. And if we click on that, we can see all of the different Dart tools have been integrated into our MDT boot image. And we could launch those just by clicking on the tool and be able to do things like browse through the file system in Windows PE. So those tools are nice, and they're useful for troubleshooting in a bunch of different scenarios. But as far as the actual deployment process goes, they really weren't so much use as part of the deployment itself. So one thing that changed when Dart 7 came out with the release, shortly after the release of Windows 7, is they added this new remote connection capability. And when we looked at that one, we said that would be something that would be useful for Windows deployment. So rather than trying to make that a manual process, we've integrated that so that when we actually start the deployment wizard, you can see a minimized window down here for the Dart remote control, remote connection agent. This is one of the pieces of Dart that runs to listen while we're in Windows PE for connections from a remote viewer. So normally when you would launch this tool, you would have to type in the ticket number, the IP address, and the port number that you see here. So the normal Dart scenario would be you have a technician at the computer who picks up the phone and calls you and says, I need some help troubleshooting. My ticket number is this, my IP address is this, and it's listening on this port. Please connect into the machine and check it out. So that's handy, but we wanted to automate that a little bit more, and we'll take a look at that in a second just to see what that looks like. But just to make it easy so that we don't have to have someone sitting at the machine and reading us these details, we can gather that information and pass it along to the server so that we can just do a one-click connection into this remote connection. You can also see the new look and feel for the main deployment wizard. We added a navigation bar on the left that we can see where we're at in the wizard. The list of steps here actually changes dynamically based on the task sequence that we've chosen. So it starts off fairly short, and as we choose a particular task sequence, it'll actually add additional steps into the process. So if we choose to deploy Windows 8 Enterprise x64, we can then see we've got a few additional panes added in. We can type in a computer name. Just call it Demo 1. We could join a domain, join a work group. So we have tried to take some of the existing wizard panes that were two different panes before, and we merged them together. So if you remember in MDT 2010, this was actually two different screens, one for the computer name and one for joining the domain. So just trying to eliminate some of the duplicate panes that we had to deal with. Another new item in MDT 2012 Update 1 is the ability to do offline user state migration. So I booted this machine via Pixie, so it went directly into Windows PE. But while we're in Windows PE, we can see that there's an existing operating system on the disk. And because of that, we can offer to migrate the user state from that operating system into the new OS that we're about to deploy. So this is useful in a couple of scenarios. One is when the operating system is just completely broken, and we want to retain the user data and deploy a new one. So that's one useful case. The other case would just be, well, I don't have to explain a different process to use for a bare metal deployment versus a refresh deployment. I can just say when I want to refresh a machine, reboot the computer, hit F12, choose the boot image, and then start the process from there, and make sure that you specify to move the user data in settings. So if I specify that here, we'll then keep the existing partition structure automatically, and we'll run USMT offline as part of the task sequence to capture all the user data and settings from that existing OS. We do have some checks in place to make sure that if the machine's BitLockered, we'll tell you that we're unable to capture the state because we're unable to unlock the drive. We'll tell you if the version of the operating system on the disk is newer than the version of the OS that you're deploying, because you can't go backwards in versions when you're using USMT. You can only go forward. We would also flag it if if we detected you were deploying an x86 OS and the existing disk had an x64 OS, because you can go from x86 to x64, but you can't go from x64 back to x86. So in this case, it's checked out. It knows that the existing OS on the drive is Windows 8 x64. I'm also deploying Windows 8 x64, so everything works out okay. Then we have the standard settings for locale and time zone. Here's another new screen that we've added in to allow us to select any optional roles and features that we might want to install as part of the deployment process. The capability of doing this has been present in MDT for a while. You just had to add a step into the task sequence to say, here are the roles and features that I wanted to install. And that was great if you wanted the same roles and features installed on every machine that you were deploying with this task sequence. By putting the wizard pane in here, we can let you choose different sets for each machine. Now, if you've ever deployed Windows 8, one of the challenges that you would run into is if you choose to install .NET 3.5. .NET 3.5 isn't actually present in the Windows 8 WIM files. It's actually available as separate files in the install media. So we've added logic into MDT that's aware of that and will automatically point DISM, the command line tool that's used to install these components, to those .NET 3.5 files so that we can still install it automatically without it trying to go out to the internet and download those components for you. So some automation is in there around that. But any other Windows 8 or Windows 7 or Server 2008 R2 or really any operating system back to Server 2003, we can install from a list of features whatever we want to layer on top of the OS. In this case, I'll just not select any. We can also select applications. In this case, because we're also deploying Windows 8, we can install the new Windows 8 applications, previously known by a name that we're not supposed to mention. But the process for installing those is not too bad. We just need to make sure that we've enabled the machine. Where'd my display go? I can still see everything up here, but the entire switch went black. So while they're looking at that one, we can install the Windows 8 applications. The DISM commands that are necessary to do that require us to also enable a policy that says that we can sideload these Windows 8 applications. That's useful. There it is again. We can import any certificates that are necessary because these apps may be signed with certs that aren't yet trusted by the machine. And we know what the command lines are to install and suppress licensing and verification and all those different things too. So it's useful ways to install Metro applications into the OS as we're deploying. And I said the M word, so I'm going to have to scratch that out of the recording. So, oh well, I tried. I have another session tomorrow talking about Windows 8 in much more detail where we'll get much more in-depth with Windows 8. Okay, they're just really going to make this fun for me, aren't they? So, screen's back. Network connection went away. So let's see if it can reconnect here in a second. It's hard to do demos when you can't get to anything that's actually running. There we go. It's my lucky day. We've also made a change to this capture wizard screen. We've added a new option to say that we want to sysprep the computer only. Before, we had the other options to say we wanted to capture an image, or we wanted to prepare to capture the image, or we wanted to not capture the image. This option is primarily useful in cases where we wanted to build VM templates, because we can specify that we want to sysprep the computer, and then we can specify a finish action that says shut down after we've completed the task sequence. And as a result, we can build the operating system inside a virtual machine, sysprep it, shut it down, and as soon as it shuts down, then import it into something like VMM to be used as a template for future operating system deployments of virtual machines. In this case, I don't want to do that. I'm just going to do a normal install. I don't really want to enable BitLocker in my virtual machine, and we'll go ahead and start the deployment. While that's running, let me switch over to the server and show another piece that we've enabled here. So if I go into the properties of my deployment chair, we've added a new monitoring node. This monitoring node enables with a single click the installation of a monitoring service where these client machines can report status back to the server so that we can see what's going on. So I've enabled that. The service is running on my machine, and when I look at the monitoring node and refresh the list here, I can see that my deployment's currently running. I typed in the computer name here so that I knew exactly which one this was, and we can see that it's currently running an offline user state capture step. This will continue to refresh every 10 seconds to show us where the deployment's currently at. And you can also see that there are some buttons here. So there's a button to initiate a remote desktop connection, an RDP connection into the machine. That won't actually work while we're in Windows PE. What will work, though, is this Dart Remote Control button. So if I click on Dart Remote Control, we can launch the Dart Remote Connection Viewer, passing command line parameters. Passing the command line parameters so that we don't need to type in those different details. But now we can see what's going on inside that virtual machine remotely just by making a network connection over to it. So that's where that integration comes from. So that'll continue to run there as well. There is actually a third button that would show up in the middle here, which would enable us to make a virtual machine connection. So if you're running Hyper-V, we can detect, when we're in the full operating system, the name of the Hyper-V host and the name of the virtual machine, and then launch the VM Connect application to make a connection in that way as well. In this case, we can't determine the name of the host and the name of the virtual machine while we're in Windows PE because the integration components aren't running in Windows PE. But as soon as it boots into the new OS, then we would see that information and the third button would show up. Okay, so that's monitoring. That really just gives us a simple way of being able to watch the deployments that are going on in our deployment chair. And if we look inside of the properties of the deployment chair again, we can see that when we enabled that, it added another switch into the custom settings file to show us that this is where the clients are expected to report their status. So every step in the task sequence that runs an MDT script ends up talking to a service running on the machine, passing the details about that particular step to it. While we're there, we have also added support for the Assessment and Deployment Kit, which is the new version of the deployment tools that used to be called the Windows AIK. ADK is the Windows 8 version, AIK is the Windows 7 version. They basically include the same core tools. The ADK also adds some new things. But the biggest changes that affect the deployment process from our perspective are a new version of Windows PE, a new version of USMT. So in the case of Windows PE, they've added some additional features that you can enable in the Windows PE image. So in this case, we have the .NET framework, Windows PowerShell 3.0, and things like DISM commandlets and storage commandlets and secure boot commandlets, just a bunch of deployment-related PowerShell commandlets that are useful to run them from Windows PE using this PowerShell support. So we can enable all of that through here for both x86 and x64 to enable those components inside of Windows PE. We also have the last item here to enable the Dart toolkit. In this case, because I'm running with the ADK and Windows PE 4.0, I need to use Dart 8. And if I were using Windows AIK, which MDT 2012 still supports, I would need to use Dart 7. The version of Dart is specific for the version of Windows PE that we're actually deploying with. Okay. cancel out of there. It's just not going to be my day for demos, is it? Not responding. Let me kill that off. And let's launch it again here. Okay, so back to my deployment chair. Let's take a quick look at the task sequence that we were just deploying with. So my Windows 8 Enterprise X64 task sequence is running here. We can see a few things that we've added in. We've added a step to opt in for the Customer Experience Improvement Program and Windows Error Reporting, which is useful but disabled by default. So if you wanted to enable that, you can enable this step, and that'll take care of providing that information back to Microsoft about any errors that may occur on your Windows machines and also just the overall experiences that you're getting with Windows 8 or Windows Server. We've added a step to apply a local GPO package. So if you're familiar with the Security Compliance Manager Solution Accelerator, it enables you to define security settings that should be applied to your operating system image, and then those can be exported as a local GPO. So there's a baseline recommendation for Windows 7, for Windows 8, for Windows XP even, to say here are the security settings that should be applied. So we've taken SCM, exported those baselines, and added them into MDT so that when this step runs, it automatically applies that baseline as a local GPO on the machine. That means that all the default recommended policies get applied. Generally, that's a good thing. There are some situations, though, where those settings can cause some issues in your environment. So you may want to review the settings that are specified in the Security Compliance Manager baselines to see if any of them are going to cause any issues for you. If they do, you have a couple of options. One is disable the step. It's not essential. You can turn it off and it won't cause any issues. The second would be to use SCM to change those settings, export your own custom baseline, and then set a task sequence variable for this step to know that instead of using the default baseline for the OS that you're deploying, here's a custom one to use instead. The types of things that tend to cause people issues and the types of issues that you may then see as a result of this are related to accessing servers that aren't running Windows. So if you've got NAS devices in your environment running SMB services that weren't provided by Microsoft and may be like 10 years behind in technology, when Windows 7 and Windows 8 tries to connect to those, with these recommended security settings, these NAS devices ask for things like clear text passwords and unsigned communications and things that Windows says, oh, wait a minute, we don't want to do that. With this GPO in place, it'll block that and you just won't be able to make a connection. So if you start seeing any issues around making connections to your file servers after this step is run, that's probably what's going on. Most modern NAS devices, even the non-Microsoft ones, will work fine because they've implemented the necessary support for those newer SMB protocols, so this doesn't cause any issues. But the cheap NAS devices that you might buy at your neighborhood electronics store, yeah, those could cause some issues related to that. So we've added that step in. We've also had to add in some steps to do the offline user state capture. So we can look in the pre-install phase, which runs inside of Windows PE, and see that there's a couple of steps added there. We've also added an additional step to enable BitLocker offline. This step requires the ADK, and it requires the new version of Windows PE that comes in the ADK. But it includes new support for two things. One is encrypting only the use space, and encrypting only the use space from within Windows PE. So as part of this step, we can basically format and partition the disk, then turn on encryption, telling it to encrypt only the used space. Well, how much used space is there right after you formatted and partitioned the disk? Almost none. So the actual encryption process takes about 2 seconds. The disk is then fully encrypted, all of the used space is fully encrypted, and then we can deploy the operating system, encrypting it on the fly as it's being written to the disk. So instead of having a 2-hour BitLocker encryption process that runs at the end of the deployment, we can turn it on inside of Windows PE, and as soon as the task sequence is done, in the normal deployment time, BitLocker's fully encrypted the disk. And all we had to do then is put the protectors onto BitLocker to set a PIN, to set a password, to enable TPM, whatever protectors you're using. We can do that once the new operating system's up and running. So the BitLocker process then really becomes two parts. One part runs in Windows PE to turn on the encryption, and then the second piece runs in the operating system to actually set the protectors and make sure that it's a protected disk. So that works with the ADK and the new version of Windows PE that comes with it. Obviously, it works great with Windows 8. It also works with Windows 7. So if you're deploying Windows 7 using MDT with the ADK and the new version of Windows PE, you can do the same thing with Windows 7 as well. So that one's nice, really easy, and can cut off quite a bit of time from your deployment process. I think that pretty much covers it. We do have the install roles and features step here that I've manually added into this task sequence because it's not there by default. We have reworked this one so that it gives us a list of roles and features that differs by operating system. In this case, I'm looking at all of the features that are available for Windows 8, but we could also look at the list for Windows 7, or Server 2003, or Server 2008 Windows Core, or Server 2012, whatever operating system we're going to be deploying, we can show a filtered list of roles and features to select from. Now, if I were to select things here, like maybe I wanted to enable Hyper-V, that becomes the default list of roles and features that need to be installed as part of the task sequence. You'll still see the wizard show up to ask if there are any additional ones that you want to add to that. So you can basically merge those two lists together and install anything you pre-selected, which no user would be able to deselect, and add in anything that was specified in the wizard at the same time. Okay. We also added in MDT 2012 a new task sequence to do a VHD deployment. So we can, instead of deploying the operating system to the physical disk, we can deploy into a VHD file. So we can format and partition the disk, we can then create an empty VHD file on that disk, and then deploy the OS into that empty VHD file. So we're creating that VHD on the fly. That results in a task sequence that looks slightly different because it has to go through two rounds of formatting and partitioning. One is to create to format and partition the physical disk, then to create the VHD, and then to format and partition that VHD. So that was actually added in MDT 2012. In Update 1, we modified this to be a little more flexible. So instead of just doing a bare metal deployment, we can also do refresh deployments. We can also say that we want to deploy to a VHD and not disturb the existing operating system. So at the end of the deployment, we can end up with one machine, two OSs, two different BCD entries, and boot back and forth between them. So that's useful for testing scenarios where maybe I want to use Windows 7 as my primary OS, but occasionally boot into Windows 8 from the VHD file to do additional testing. In this case, I've got a machine that I've deployed using that. So let me switch over to that machine. So it's at the end of the deployment process. It doesn't look any different than any other deployment. One thing that you can see here, though, is another feature that we added in MDT 2012 for light touch deployments. We added a new hide shell option so that the deployment happens before the shell actually loads. If you're familiar with the way LightTouch deployments normally work, we automatically log on as the local administrator account. We create a startup group folder item that runs the LightTouch script to continue the task sequence, and you can see the full shell. When you set hide shell equals yes, it changes that so that instead it runs the LightTouch script directly from a run once entry. That happens before the shell is fully loaded. So as a result, we can't see the shell. We're just sitting here at this point in time waiting for someone to click finish for the task to end, and at that point the shell will finally load. So let me go ahead and do that. And at that point, we see the start screen show up for Windows 8, and our operating system is fully deployed. Let me switch over to the desktop here, launch Explorer, just to show what this looks like from a deploy to VHD perspective. We have a physical disk here, which has 126 gig physical disk, and then we have a VHD that's running on that, which is in the VHD folder. That's about 100 gig. And when we're seeing it here, we can see that 93 of that 101 gig is actually free. So we created, and well, we formatted and partitioned the physical disk. We created a VHD file that by default was 80% of the free space on the machine. And when that VHD file booted for the first time, it expanded itself to full size. So if you didn't want it to take up 80% of your free disk space, you could set some additional task sequence variables to, say, shrink that down to maybe a fixed 40 gig size or something like that so that it just doesn't take up as much disk space. But it's one of the behaviors of boot from VHD that the first time the VHD boots up, it will fully expand itself to the size that you configured when it was created. Okay. So let me switch back over to the server here again. Cancel out of that for a moment. We can also see that we've added support for a couple of additional operating systems here. Windows Thin PC is a stripped-down version of Windows 7 that's designed to act as a thin client, where it really only runs Internet Explorer and remote desktop connections and similar third-party products. If you have software assurance and are maybe planning to do a large VDI implementation using existing hardware, this would be the type of OS that you would put onto those existing older hardware PCs to connect into your VDI infrastructure. Deploys just like Windows 7, so to support that's really pretty easy. It's also PosReady 7, which is actually a close brother to Thin PC, but it's designed for a different purpose. It's designed to run point-of-sale systems and cash registers and things like that. So it's primarily targeting the retailers who are going to be running those types of devices. MDT added those because we wanted to be able to make a simple statement that MDT would support 100% of the operating systems currently supported by Microsoft that are available for volume license customers to purchase. Those two are the ones that we were missing. We support everything from Windows XP all the way up now through Windows 8 and Server 2012, but we didn't have PosReady 7 and Thin PC in there. Volume license customers can buy those, so we added those in to be complete. So maybe you'll never deploy those, but you can if you want to. We also have added support for running PowerShell inside of a task sequence. So in this case, I have a nice simple task sequence here that really only contains a single step to run a PowerShell script. And it really doesn't do anything that special. If we switch over here, we can see the script itself, which does nothing more than write some output, gets a list of modules, gets a list of PowerShell drives, does a directory of the task sequence environment, displays the progress, counting from 1 to 100, the percent complete, just some basic things to exercise the capabilities. So what we're really trying to achieve then is to make it easier to run PowerShell scripts inside of a task sequence. So if I actually run that task sequence, which I can do on the server because it doesn't really do anything other than run that script, we can see what that looks like. So I kick that off. Now we can see it counting from 1 to 100 to display the progress. And as soon as that's done, we can see the output that it generated just to get a feel for how simple it is to do something like dump out all the task sequence variables. So let me do it this way. In the trace tool, I can open up demo.log file, and if we scroll backwards through that, we can see where it started off, which was the line that said hello world. So that was the first thing the script did. Then it said give me a list of all the loaded modules, and then a list of all of the task sequence drives. What we really were interested in here were these two drives, this TSENV and TSENV list. Those are PowerShell providers that are provided as part of MDT that enable you to do something like DIR TSENV colon. That was the line in the script that we were looking at right here. And in this case, this one line said to get a directory of all the task sequence environment variables and write their output to the current host, which in this case was MDT. So they all end up going into the log file. So that one line generated all of this output. So we can see everything that MDT defined as part of the execution of that task sequence. It gathered up information about the IP addresses. We have some additional variables that were added in to detect that we're running as part of a hypervisor. We know that we're running inside of a virtual machine. We know this particular machine isn't running with UEFI. So a whole lot of information is gathered as part of the task sequence initialization process. We know that the machine supports NX. We know that it doesn't support the virtualization technologies, which is typical because we're running inside of a virtual machine, so that's hidden. And the machine doesn't support SLAT. Well, SLAT's another one of those items that most people don't care so much about until you deploy Windows 8 and want to turn on Hyper-V. So in order to enable Hyper-V on Windows 8, you have to have hardware that supports SLAT. So we wanted to add in the detection for that so we could tell you, does this machine support SLAT or not? But as far as the PowerShell script goes, this is really just showing us what we can do from a simple task sequence step, that we can run a PowerShell script that interacts with the task sequence to dump out all kinds of information. So we've provided that, and we make it available for you to use, but for the most part, MDT is still using VBScript for everything else. So it's one of those future enablement items that over time will move more to PowerShell, but for right now, everything is still pretty much VBScript. There are some exceptions to that for the roles and features installation, but everything else is still VBScript. We also added another step in MDT 2012 Update 1 to run an orchestrator runbook as part of a task sequence. So in this case, we can add a step into any task sequence. Here I just have a nice short one where we can say that we want to point to a particular orchestrator server and select a runbook from there. So if I click on Browse, we should get a list of the runbooks that are available on that server and be able to pick one. And then they expose what parameters are actually specified for that runbook. So we could then hard code those by specifying the values that should be provided to the runbook, or we can just let them be assigned automatically as part of the deployment process. So if there is a runbook parameter whose name matches a task sequence variable, we'll automatically take the task sequence variable name and pass it along to Orchestrator. The Orchestrator runbook can do whatever work it wants on the back end, so that's where another case where you need to be creative and figure out, well, what should this runbook do? When it's done, it can return values back, and those values that are returned back get passed along to the task sequence and are set as task sequence variables, and the rest of the task sequence can then consume those values. So in this case, my Orchestrator server doesn't have too much in it. It just has one runbook in there. That one runbook takes two parameters, a message and the OSD computer name. We could explicitly specify the values, or we could just say automatically provide the runbook values to match up those task sequence variable names, and we can say wait for the runbook to finish before continuing. So let me click OK on that. Let's run that one just to see what that one looks like. There's my orchestrator task sequence, and we can kick that one off. So it talked to orchestrator, told it to run the runbook. That runbook completed very quickly and has already returned control back to this machine. So a very fast process to go through. We can look at the log that we created as part of that process, where we can see we built the URL to talk to the orchestrator web service. We passed the parameters along to it, and we got an output parameter from the runbook called log result, and the orchestrator runbook passed along a value for that particular output parameter that said I did it. So we automatically set a task sequence variable with the value that was passed back. So fairly easy to do. So for those of you who are already using Orchestrator, this is a nice convenient way to integrate that into your OS deployment process. If you aren't running Orchestrator yet, well, maybe you want to try it out, because it's one of those tools that's really great for integrating all the different System Center products together, but also for integrating in any other sources of data that you might want. Before this, we would have said, if you wanted to do this type of integration, write a web service, create a store procedure, get your developers involved, and create something like that. But Orchestrator is an IT pro-focused tool, so you could switch from, instead of requiring developer resources to do this type of customization, you can go into the Orchestrator runbook designer and do it via drag and drop. So it's fairly easy to add steps into this orchestration to tie together different sources of information, do some crunching, and then return the results back to the machine. Some of the examples that we thought about were, well, you could have a runbook to move a computer to a different OU. You could have a runbook that, in the case of a task sequence failure, creates a trouble ticket. You could have a runbook that sends you an email message. I mean, there are lots of different things that you could do as part of these runbooks to integrate it into the task sequence. Okay. One of the other things that we've added in is something that you really can't see so much, but will become important as we get deeper into Windows 8. And that's around UEFI. So for those of you who don't know what UEFI is, basically it's a replacement for the legacy BIOS that's been on Windows PCs forever, really since the original IBM PC. Now that's been reinvented, reimagined, and this new UEFI firmware takes its place. So a lot of the machines that have shipped over the last 12 to 18 months have actually already moved to UEFI, but they include a compatibility module that enables them to emulate the old BIOS behavior. So most of you haven't even noticed. With Windows 8 and the new Windows 8 logo compliant hardware that's going to be out, that's going to take a big switch. It's going to take a shift over to shipping with UEFI enabled by default and starting to see a lot of benefits as a result. The machines will power on faster. They'll start up faster. The operating system will load faster. Everything about the whole experience will be faster. To get to the point where from the time you push the power button until the time you can actually usefully use the machine might only be 15 seconds. Depending on the hardware, depending on the different devices that are in there, your performance may vary, but it's going to be faster using UEFI than not using UEFI. So that then means that all the deployment tools really need to support UEFI and support it well. MDT 2010 supported UEFI. MDT 2012 improves on that. MDT 2012 Update 1 continues to improve on that as we've learned, as we've been working with these prototype machines and figure out how all this stuff is supposed to work. Configuration Manager has been adding support for UEFI as well. So when Config Manager SP1 comes out, it'll fully support UEFI deployment too. So what we wanted to enable was to make sure that when we do a UEFI deployment, that the deployment process doesn't look any different than it did for a non-UEFI deployment. So it just transparently works. In this case, my laptop here, which is a standard ThinkPad, is enabled for UEFI, and I did a UEFI deployment to it. And you really can't tell. MSIT put the deployment process together using standard MDT task sequences. And if we look at the machine, the only way we can really tell, well, we can't really tell from there. We just see that there's one disk. Windows 8, we can right-click down the corner here and bring up Disk Management. And from there, we can see a little bit more that this machine has three partitions on it. It has a recovery partition that's required in order to support BitLocker. It has an EFI system partition. That's basically where the boot files reside. And then the operating system is on the main partition, using up the rest of the disk space. So MDT knows to create a four-partition disk structure. That's a three-partition disk structure. Well, no, it isn't. It's a four-partition disk structure. The disk management tool lies. So let me run disk part. Select disk zero. And list part. It really is four partitions. We've got that recovery partition that we saw in the disk management tool. We have the system partition, and we have the primary partition for the OS. The one that's not shown in the UI is that reserved partition in the middle, the MSR partition. That's required for UEFI, but for whatever reason, it doesn't show up inside of the UI. But MDT knows that when you start it up using UEFI, that you need to create this partition structure automatically. And the same will apply with Config Manager 2012 SP1 as well, where we'll automatically create this four-partition structure needed to boot using UEFI. If we look at the properties of this disk, we can see that it no longer uses MBR partition tables. It now uses GPT. So it's a fairly significant change as far as the disk format, the partitioning structure, the way the operating system loads, the way BCD works, all kinds of changes going on behind the scenes. But the tools at least will hide all of that from you so that the whole process ends up just working. Okay. So, what did we look at? Well, we know that we support Windows 8 and ADK. We can install roles and features. We have new Windows PE feature packs. We can do BitLocker pre-provisioning. We've integrated the Dart toolkit. We integrated SCM. We've integrated WinRE. We can run Orchestrator. We can run PowerShell. Okay. We can deploy to VHD. We can deploy to UEFI. We can deploy Thin PC, Pause Ready, and we can do offline user state capture. We've got improvements in the look and feel of the wizards. We've added the monitoring capability, and we've done all kinds of stuff behind the scenes just to make the whole end-to-end process better. So that's basically what I walked through for the last however many minutes. So now let's talk about Config Manager. As part of the Config Manager side, we've made enough changes first to support Config Manager 2012. And then made enough changes to support Config Manager 2012 SP1. So first of all, for Config Manager 2012, we needed to integrate with a new console. So they rewrote the Config Manager console from scratch again. So in the case of the MDT integration, we have integration on the Task Sequences node. So we can right-click and say that we want to create an MDT task sequence. And we also have integration on the boot images node, so we can create boot images using MDT. Inside of the task sequence editor, we have the same basic capabilities that we had before. I always do that. Right-click, edit. Plus, we have the additional task sequence actions that we were looking at before. So we have one to install roles and features that we looked at inside of LightTouch. Same basic functionality here. We've added a new one, both for LightTouch and for Config Manager, to uninstall roles and features, which is useful especially for Windows 8. We'll talk about that more tomorrow. And we've also added then steps to run PowerShell and to execute Orchestrator runbooks. So the same new functions that were added for LightTouch were also added for Config Manager as well. As far as the wizards go, if we wanted to create a new task sequence using MDT, there's actually one fewer template in MDT 2012 Update 1. The In MDT 2012 and MDT 2010 Update 1, there was a task sequence for UDI and a task sequence for ZTI. There was a client template and a user-driven installation template. In Update 1, we merged those two together. So either way, if you want to do a ZTI deployment or a UDI deployment, you would choose the client task sequence template. And as we go through this, you eventually get a choice to say, well, do you want this to be ZTI or UDI? So in this case, I'll just take some defaults. I don't need to capture an image. I'll use an existing boot image, so that's fast. If I were to create a new boot image, let me just do that real quick. Oops. We can still choose the platform and the scratch space. In Config Manager 2012 SP1, they've added support for the ADK. So as a result, when MDT is creating a boot image, we can see all of those same ADK components. So we could create a boot image with .NET, with PowerShell, with all the commandlets that we wanted, and also with the Dart tools added in as well. So those same remote control capabilities and monitoring capabilities that we have for LightTouch, we can also do with Config Manager as well. That's new with Update 1. We enable command support by default on the boot images when we create them. It's always useful for troubleshooting. I'll use an existing toolkit files package that contains all the MDT scripts. I'll use an existing OS image because it's faster. Yeah, we'll just do Windows 8. And here's the choice that I talked about before. So we can perform a zero-touch installation with no user interaction, or we can say that we want to perform a user-driven installation. Really, the only difference ends up being one step in the task sequence. So let me just go ahead and finish this wizard out. We'll choose the Config Manager client package, which Config Manager 2012 creates automatically now. We'll select the USMT package, which is created automatically now. Choose a settings package for Windows 8 x86, which contains custom settings and unattend.xml. Don't need sysprep files, and at that point we could go ahead and we could create the task sequence. In this case, I don't want to do that because it would take a while to create the boot image, so let me cancel out. Actually, let me back up 1 minute just to show one other thing while I'm here. If we chose, say, Windows Server 2012, which I know you shouldn't do with a client task sequence, you will see an additional wizard pane show up now, which asks which image index do you want to choose out of that operating system WIM file. That was something that was missing in MDT 2010, so it would always pick image index 1, which generally didn't cause any problems. You could go in later and change it from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, or whatever image you wanted to deploy. But if by chance you had a WIM that had an x86 image and an x64 image in it, you would create a task sequence pointing to, say, an x86 image and then try to change it to an x64 one. That would cause a variety of issues. So by letting you choose the image index, we can make sure that we create the right answer files as we're going through this. So let me look at one of the existing task sequences here for UDI. If we edit that, we can see that there's one step in here that says to set the variable skip wizard to a value of no. So UDI shows the wizard, ZTI doesn't show the wizard. So in this case, UDI skip wizard is set to no. If we go to one of my ZTI task sequences, it is set to yes. Skip wizard is set to yes. So that's really the only difference now between a ZTI and a UDI task sequence. There are different steps within the task sequence, but they decide what to do based on the value of that particular variable. Now that also means that we can do offline USMT for ZTI task sequences, just like we could do it with UDI task sequences before. We've also added in new steps if you're running Config Manager SP1 to do UEFI deployments, again with the four partition structure. We've added in steps to do offline BitLocker. So if we scroll down here, we can see a step here to pre-provision BitLocker. We've added steps to apply the local GPO packs. Somewhere in here, there it is, apply GPO pack. So really a lot of the same things that we had talked about on LightTouch have also been provided as part of the Config Manager task sequences as well. The other change that comes with Config Manager 2012 is we need to be able to install applications. So we've added two steps into the task sequence here to take a list, a dynamically generated list of applications, and feed it into the install applications step. In this case, we pass it a base variable name called coalesced apps. But we've got another step right before it that takes the list of applications that was probably built from either an MDT database or through the UDI wizard or through whatever other means. That list tends to be built with a 3-digit suffix. Config Manager only wants a 2-digit suffix, so we put a script in here to take those 3-digit lists, convert them to 2-digit lists, and then pass it along to be installed. So just dealing with a little quirk in Config Manager 2012. And I think that's about it. Yep, let's switch back over to the slide and see if I missed anything. So we've added support for Config Manager 2012. We've integrated with the new console. We can install apps. One thing I didn't talk about was we can pre-configure user device affinity. So we can specify as part of the task sequence the primary user for the machine that we're deploying. In the case of ZTI, that's just setting a task sequence variable to say here is the primary user for the machine. In the case of UDI, there's a wizard pane that asks you what's the user ID of the person that should become the primary user of this machine. That's useful because that can pre-install the apps that belong to that user so you don't have to wait for them to log on the first time. We can now deploy Windows 8 when Config Manager 2012 SP1 is out. The beta for that is due very, very soon. We can do BitLocker pre-provisioning, which again is tied to SP1 and the ADK. We can do UEFI deployments, which is tied to SP1. We've integrated Dart version 7 and version 8. We have the same SCM integration for the local GPO packs. We have System Center Orchestrator, PowerShell in the task sequence. Offline state capture for ZTI scenarios. We've integrated monitoring. We will continue to support Config Manager 2007, so we're not dropping anything. And a whole bunch of things behind the scenes, like what we talked about for merging the UDI and ZTI task sequences together. So, then we get to UDI. And I have exactly 2 minutes left, so I'll have to do this really quickly. In the case of UDI, we have created a new wizard. We basically rewrote it in MDT 2012, and we enhanced it in MDT 2012 Update 1. And as part of that, let me switch over to a client machine and show you what that wizard looks like. So we have a wizard here that we can use to start off the deployment process, or we can enable BitLocker, which I can bypass. Really, a lot of the same functionality that we would see with LightTouch, we can do with Config Manager as well. In this case, it didn't detect an existing Windows installation, so it doesn't offer the choice of capturing the user state offline from that. So I have to check the box to say, yes, please go ahead and format and partition the disk. We can see down here we've got the Dart integration running and the monitoring has been enabled. We can restore user data that's captured from a different machine that may have been captured to a USB drive or to a network share. We can run a bunch of validation checks to make sure it's okay to continue. We can type in the computer name. We can pre-populate a list of domains and organizational units that we might want to put this computer into. We can specify the join credentials. In this case, I put in the account but didn't pre-configure the password. We can type in the local administrator password. any additional accounts that we want to add into the local administrators group. And here's where we can set the UDA primary user for this particular machine. At that point, we can choose languages, keyboard layouts, time zones. We can choose optional applications that we want to install as part of the task sequence using that install application step to dynamically install them. This does support the old packages and programs mechanism too, so it doesn't matter which one you're using as you're migrating from Config Manager 2007 to 2012. We can handle both of those. Get one final summary screen to show us what we're going to do, and then we can kick off the deployment process. So that's what the client-side wizard looks like. On the server side, we have the UDI designer, which I have up and running here somewhere. So we can open up an existing configuration file. In that configuration file, we can specify the list of applications that we wanted to install. We can put in some details about the domains that we would want to join or the OUs that we want to pre-configure. So I pre-populated that with the list that we saw before. And one of the other new things that was added was the ability to create your own custom page. So in MDT 2012 Update 1, we have a new feature called Build Your Own Page. So I can say that I want to do that, type in a display name and a page name, and then get a designer where I can really just drag and drop to put items onto that particular page. I thought I clicked on that. Let me try that again. Build your own page. Oh, I did add it. So it's over here somewhere. There it is. I had to double click to open it here, and then I can add things to it like checkboxes and combo boxes and text boxes and other things that I want. When I'm happy with the particular page, I can go back to the flow and say that I want to add that page in to a particular point. Like maybe I want to put it right after, or in this case, right before the welcome page. And then at that point, I can click to preview and see what my new page looks like. So rather than having to go through any SDK and write code and trying to create a complicated wizard page setup, we can just do drag and drop and design a much easier to build wizard page experience there. So I didn't create a pretty page because, well, I don't have any more time to create a pretty page, but you can see that it's fairly easy to create a new wizard page to add into this process. After I've defined that, I can save it into the package, update my package files, and off we go. Okay, so that's pretty much it for UDI. So we do support Config Manager 2012. Using the new application model, we can configure user device affinity. We saw that in the wizard. We added support for SP1 so that we can deploy with Windows 8. We can do the mWord application installation as part of this process, although it actually installs those as the user, not as the not per machine. So that one gets a little tricky, and if we had another hour, we could talk more about that. There's a new UDI designer and wizard, adds BitLocker, replace scenario, build your own pages. You can localize it if you like using resource editing tools. There is an extensive amount of SDK documentation if you really wanted to write your own pages in C# and in C++. And then we also have the build your own page support, which is much easier. We also pick up all the same features from ZTI, which, again, we picked up all the same features from LTI. So that's why we can start off spending a whole lot of time talking about LTI, and then when we get to ZTI and UDI, the discussion goes a lot faster because we've already talked about most of them. So that's as quick as I can possibly go through that. My final wrap-up to let you get out of here is to suggest that you download MDT 2012 Update 1. It's available today. You can use it to deploy Windows 8. You can use it with Config Manager 2012 SP1. You can submit any feedback you want through connect.microsoft.com. That ends up creating bugs in our bug database, so please do that. There is a mailing list through myitforum.com that's great for OSD-related discussions. There's a very active set of forums related to MDT and OSD on TechNet. And we do have a Facebook page, so if you're a fan of MDT, please sign up. Whew. Now I'm out of breath. So, All done. Thanks for attending. Please fill out your evaluations. And I've got another session later on troubleshooting and another session tomorrow talking about what's new in Windows 8 deployment. Hopefully that was a useful summary. Doing it in an hour time slot is pretty hard. But fortunately we got through it all. The network and the power and the video and all the other issues didn't get in our way too much. So thanks for attending.